G'day everybody, welcome back to the Birders Guide. How are we all going? Hope you've all had a fantastic fortnight, got some birding in, done some stuff, whatever it is that you wanted to achieve. There was very little birding happening in my life. We've just bought a house, so my life has revolved around planning to pack, packing, moving, unpacking, and doing a million tiny little jobs around the place that my wife wants done. So no birding for me. But that's fine. I didn't really have much I was going to say in this introduction, to be honest. There hasn't been much seen around the place that I didn't mention last time, I'm pretty sure. There were a couple of buff-breasted sandpipers seen around the place. If you want to find out, best place would be to have a look on the Australian Twitch's Facebook page. We're just going to get straight into this conversation, I think, today. Now, initially when I was going to chat to Adrian, we were going to talk about his life, his birding, and the Cairns Esplanade. What ended up happening was we were talking about a single species for a fair while, and then we were going to split it into two episodes and release them both more or less simultaneously, because we ended up chatting for nearly an hour and a half, which is probably a little bit too long for one episode. However, we had huge amounts of issues. First of all, the Zoom kept cutting out and slowing people's voices down. It was a bit odd and very annoying. And then in order to try and fix that, Adrian swapped from his phone to his laptop. And then that meant we had three people on the Zoom call, which meant that after 40 minutes, Zoom told us that they were going to turn us off, because you can only have 40 minutes if you have more than two people on the free version. And then, so we quit that Zoom call, we started again, and then in the haste of all of that, I forgot to press record on Adrian's thing. So we've got about 45 minutes of me talking and nothing of Adrian. So I have informed him of that, and at some point over the next fortnight, we're going to get back together and re-record the second half. But we do still have the first half, so it's going to be a little bit odd and a bit different, because this podcast is just going to stop. And you'll know when it's going to stop, because I mentioned to Adrian, Zoom's about to cut us off, so I'll just turn this one off and I'll resend you a link and we'll get going. And that'll be the end. We did have another fantastic chat after that, but nothing got recorded. So this one is part one. It's a bit different. It's not, it won't have a middle and a finish necessarily, because it wasn't supposed to be that way. But I hope you find it interesting nonetheless. Let me know whether you enjoyed it or not. It's just to talk about a single species, and in fact, a single bird. Let me know if you enjoy it, because if you do, I'll do more. If you don't, I won't. I'm here to do what you would like, so let me know either way. But that's really all I have to say, so let's get into it.
You're listening to The Birder's Guide with Michael Greenshields.
So, Adrian, welcome to The Birder's Guide. It's great to have you on the show.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Michael. Thanks for inviting me. It's a pleasure.
Before we get too much further into this, we've got a few things we're going to cover, but I would like to start by talking about the star of the show for a minute, which is neither of us, but rather a Nordman's Greenshank. Now, I was going to do this in the introduction, which I haven't done yet, but I thought I might do it now instead. So I just want to read the opening sentence of The Birds of the World, which is a brilliant resource. There's a fair bit of free stuff, but if you want to part with 50-odd bucks a year, it's very handy. It says, the Nordman's Greenshank is classified by the IUCN Red List as endangered, and the first sentence says,
With a small and declining population of only 1,200 to 2,000 individuals, the enigmatic and endangered Nordman's greenshank is among the rarest shorebirds in the world. Now, if you also look at its range, which is also on Birds of the World, it's got a fairly small breeding range on the east coast of Russia, a bit north of Japan, and then its non-breeding grounds are is a bit in India, Bangladesh, and Malaysia, Indonesia. You yep. managed to find one in neither of those places, correct?
I'm pretty sure I have. Yeah, otherwise a lot of people are wrong at the moment. There's a lot of people flying into Cairns and wasting the money. it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So you're in rare company, pardon the pun, as one of what must be only very few people who have ever been the first to discover a mega. So I got two questions out of that. First of all, what is a mega for someone who is listening who perhaps isn't a Twitcher or aware of Twitchers?
Well, basically you have rare birds and then you have mega rare birds. So you would expect, for example, if we're talking purely in shorebirds and migratory birds, you know, Australia does get, you know, a fair whack of rare birds flying in, you know, on the migratory routes, on the East Asian Australasian flyway. So, for example, a rare bird would be something like the Asian Dowitcher on Cairns Esplanade. So that's that last turned up, say, in November 2019 for, say, 3 days, and then it disappeared again. You would expect something like that bird to show up maybe once a year, once every 2 or 3 years, something like that, in somewhere like Cairns. So it's a rare bird. I mean, sure enough, you know, and if you're away for that that week, it just happens to fly by, then you're basically going to miss it. So the mega rarities are the ones that are mind-blowingly rare. So for someone like myself, who's been sort of birding on and off for about, you know, 40 years now, I don't know, we might get to that a bit later. You might ask another question about how I started. To find a mega rare bird, like a bird that it's either the first time it showed up somewhere. So, for example, with the Norman's greenshank, as far as we know, or as far as has been recorded, this is the first time this bird has actually appeared in Queensland or anywhere on the east coast of Australia, which is, as you know, it's a huge coastline with a lot of birders, you know, looking for rare birds all the time. So, so a mega is basically mega rare. It's something that's probably normally you'd say, you know, the first time you see a bird in a country as well, that would be a mega rarity. But the interesting thing about the Nordman's greenshank is not just this bird being here on the Cairns Esplanade is it a mega rarity. But the interesting thing about it is it's actually been here for quite a while. I mean, as far as we know, it's been here since December the 25th. That's the earliest that we can sort of pinpoint down it actually has been here since. It was positively identified on the 1st of January. It is still here, amazingly. So there's
2 months. That's a fair while.
It's a fair while. Yeah, it's a fair while. So what I was going to say was, not only is it mega rare for it to actually have shown up, but as you've also highlighted, it's also exceptionally rare in itself. There's not many of them left. You know, it's unfortunately may go extinct at some point in the near future. So that's why it's sort of critical. And this is why I've sort of felt since this bird showed up in Cairns that it's had a bizarre effect on me, because I felt a sort of ownership of it. And so I've been down there as much as I possibly can, which for someone who works full time, you know, and has a young family, it's been quite difficult because all I've wanted to do is just be down there as much as I can, getting as much video as I possibly can of this bird, taking as many photographs as I possibly can of this bird, because I know how critically important that is as a pure record of what this bird does, simply because it is just so incredibly rare. So it's just been a fantastic opportunity to basically go down the Esplanade, try and find it, and then just, you know, if I'm free for the day, if I'm let off domestic chores and chores with my children for the day, then, you know, I'll be down there videoing it and taking photos of it, you know, because I've got that in the back of my mind that this thing can just go at any point in time. And there was a period in February where I thought it had gone for 4 days. Nobody had seen it for 4 days. And I just couldn't believe how sad I was. Yeah, I'm getting quite emotional, actually, just thinking about I was, you know, because it's just become such a big part of my birding life to have found this bird. It's such a special bird to me.
I don't want to just focus on this greenshank, because we're going to talk about the Esplanade and Cairns and your own journey. But I do have one more question. But talking about, you were mentioning that there's not much known about them and they're quite rare. So I just had a quick flick through the Birds of the World thing about them. And it says here that the Nordman's greenshank is one of only three shorebird species that nest in trees and is the only one known to build its own nest, and only 10 nests have ever been found in the world.
Yeah.
That's
yes, I've been. It is. I've been reading a little bit about this lately, and so I'm planning to do a lot more research and sort of contact, you know, a few of the experts on the Nordman's greenshank. There's a few things I'm going to do with the information that I've got. But yeah, you're quite right. I mean, this is all of information that I really didn't know about either. Because if you're a birder like me, you know, you've been birding for a while, and you'll have a few guidebooks, and you know, you'll flick through them. You'll be conscious of the names of vagrants. But you know, if you're at my level of birding, you might not necessarily know, you know, a heap of information about that bird. So. Obviously, finding this bird sort of made me sort of read a bit more about it. So yes, it nests in trees. I actually found that out, you know, soon after I actually ID'd the bird myself, and you know, I thought, gee, that's the last place I think a wader would be nesting. That's quite bizarre, really. Yeah. And you're right. It's like where they nest is like really inhospitable, and I think there's Russian researchers have been out to the locations, and like you say, it's been just so incredibly difficult to actually find the nests. So they are a real mystery, a lot of their behaviour. One of the joys with watching this bird is watching its behaviour. I mean, I think it's a very smart bird. I think it's very adaptable. I watched it the other day, and I've put this video up on the Cairns Esplanade Birds Facebook page, but I watched it sort of. It was doing this almost like a dance around the windrill. The windrill had a crab and ripped the legs off it. And I've not seen this before, but the Nordman's was like, you know, I'm going to steal something off this windrill. And you know, the windrill's quite a bit bigger than it, you know, but it wasn't. Didn't look too scared of it. And it went round it did a couple of circles, walked around it, and you could tell it was checking it out and seeing if it would drop this shell or make a mistake. And sure enough, the windmill wasn't looking for a moment, and the Nordman sort of snuck in because it saw part of the carapace on the mud and just nicked in quickly, just grabbed it and ran off. I thought that was pretty clever. And the other thing I noticed about this bird is it's very, what I call, I hate to anthropomorphize, but let's face it, you know, we're human beings, we anthropomorphize. But it looks like a bit of a thinker. I mean, it'll have something to eat, and it'll just stand there for like five. It won't be sleeping or anything or resting. It'll probably be digesting a crab, because Lord knows it doesn't half, you know, go through crabs, this bird, like nobody's business. It is unbelievable to watch how many crabs it can eat. I mean, its stomach must be able to expand a great deal. But I've seen it just stand there for 5-6 minutes. I've got it on 4K video, actually, just standing there on both legs, just with its eyes open, and it's just fairly still, and it's just taking everything in, and it's unbelievable to watch it do that, because you watch the other waders all the time. You know, great knots don't do that. You know, I can't imagine the tacklers don't really do that much. It just seems to have a little bit of smarts about this bird. Maybe I'm just biased because I just love it so much. You know.
Just because it's your baby and everyone thinks their baby is the
Yeah, closest. Well, this is it. Yeah, it's playing second fiddle to my three children at the moment, which is a bit of a turn up for me. But I absolutely love watching this bird. I actually read recently as well, someone had observed it actually almost tern-like in behaviour and sort of flying up and diving down and actually catching crabs that way. Yeah, so I read that recently as well, so I'm looking out for that one as well. I thought, yeah, forget that one, video, that'd be great. But it's only actually ever been observed in one individual, so I don't like the chances.
The last question I was going to ask you about the Nordmans, run us through, I'm not going to say that it's every birder's dream to find a mega, but probably every twitcher's dream to be the first person to see something. So run us through what it was like, what was the emotional roller coaster like from spotting a bird which is a bit unusual. It's not like a emperor penguin. It's not like jumps out at you that it's obviously what it is. A bit unusual to finally getting it confirmed by, you know, people in the know.
Yeah, so really interesting. So I got up really early on New Year's Day and came down to Esplanade. So I think I was down. On Cairns Estimate about 6:45, I think, is when I started the eBird checklist, because I tend to use eBird. I think it's a fantastic resource. And, I've been spending a fair bit down the Esplanade over the past year, probably more so than I have done in previous years. And one of the main reasons I've been spending a bit more time is because I've got this new camera. So I've got this new Nikon P1000, which has got this ridiculous 3000 millimeter optical zoom lens. So I was really enjoying using the camera because you can just see so much with it. You know, it is if you're into identifying birds at ridiculous distances, then don't look at anything else. You know, just this camera's just unbelievable. So it just really suited me because I previously had. So I think it was just an Olympus with a 60 or 70 times optical zoom. So it was a bit of a smaller bridge camera with a smaller CCD. But I really enjoyed using that camera because I actually ditched. I'm going off track a bit at the moment, but I will get back to your question. I had actually ditched. You wouldn't believe this for someone who's a birder, but I actually ditched binoculars about 7 years ago because I was a bit tired about the number of birds would fly past my binoculars and they'd be gone within 2 seconds, 3 seconds. And, you know, I'd have no record of it and I'd just be second guessing what that bird was. So that's why I moved to using a camera. And I know it's sort of, apart from the people who are trying to take really good photographs, you know, I don't come across a lot of people who are just using the camera as their main, you know, source of identifying birds. So that's basically what I've been doing for the last 7 years. So I've got this new camera. I've had it for about a year. And yeah, so I park myself. I go down to the south end of the Esplanade first. So the Esplanade's about 3 kilometres long. So I go down to the south end. I just have a quick look what's there. I think the tide was coming in at the time. So I didn't have too much time, you know, before the birds sort of flew off. And I thought, I'll just walk down to the Muddies platform. So there's a playground called Muddies, more towards the south end of the Esplanade. And it's the County Council have done a really good job, actually, lately, because they sort of upgraded the boardwalk and they've got these points along the boardwalk that sort of jut out a little bit. I call them platforms, you know, and you can actually lean on them because they've got a nice wooden sort of railing, you know, that you can just, you actually, you know, if you're good at holding a camera steady, you actually don't really need a tripod. So a lot of the time I haven't been taking a tripod down either. So I've just been going down with the camera and just leaning on this railing. So I was just on the railing and I was just pointing the camera out at just a small group of birds in front of me. So there was a small group of I think it was some knots and tattlers from memory. I'll have to look back through my photographs. And I'm just trying to think how far away the bird was. So probably about, I said about 50 to 100 metres. I can't remember exactly. But and it was a very grey day. It was an overcast day. It wasn't raining, but the light wasn't terrific. At that time in the morning as well, the sun's rising. The sun's sort of rising, even if it's rising through a bunch of clouds, you know, it's still, that's where the main source of light is. It's coming from the east. So, you know, you have to sort of try and position yourself in a good place to sort of say you're not actually looking sort of towards the sun. So that forces you sometimes when you're tracking birds, you know, to, you know, walk up and down to get in the right spot. So I didn't have the greatest light conditions, let's put it that way. So I zoomed in and I saw this bird. And, you know, because I'm down there all the time, I'm not an expert. I'm not an ornithologist. I'm not someone who sort of rings birds or, studies them full time. You know, this has been really a hobby for me, you know, a sort of weekend passion, as it were, for 40 years. So I'm there and I see this bird and, you know, it's about the size of a knot, and I didn't recognise it. The first thing, this is what I tell everybody, I said the first thing I noticed was that bill, and I couldn't really see, because of the lighting, when I first looked at it, I couldn't really see the bicolour, you know, because that's one of the things you read about in the guidebook, is the bicolour bill, you know, it's yellowish at the base and it's black at the other half, at the lower half. I couldn't really see that. All I could see was, gee, that bill's thick. And then you're looking at the proportions of the bird and you're going, I don't recognise this bird. You know, that's like the first thing that popped into my head. Now, that either means I'm absolutely hopeless to identify wading birds, you know, which I hope I'm not. I'm improving all the time. But, you know, the reason waders are just so fascinating to me is because they're a tricky bunch of birds because, you know, they're mostly the same color. You know, a lot of them are the same size, and you know, you can get, you know, rarities showing up, you know, that look like other birds. You can get hybrids, and so that's why, you know, I find shorebirds very interesting, because it's a challenge sometimes, you know, it really is. And so I'm there and I'm going, you know, hang on, I don't recognize this bird, I don't recognize that bill, because the bill was thick and stout. And I did not even think of greenshank at all, because I think at that stage, I didn't even really see the upturn in the bill. So the bird was fairly sort of still. It wasn't really doing much. It was doing a bit of preening. So, you know, it wasn't feeding. So I didn't see any of the classic feeding maneuvers. And so within the first 10 seconds, I pressed that record button on the 4K video. I thought, if this thing flies away now, I'm not going to get any good photographs. Even I've just got to record it in 4K. So I've got some sort of record of it, even if it's 10 seconds or 15 seconds. You know, little did I know it'd still be here 2 months later. So recorded it, and then so I had a couple of minutes of it doing stuff, during which I was going through things in my head, and obviously I'm thinking rarities because I didn't recognise the bird. And then I stopped the video. I took a few photographs, and then I've written about this in the Australian, the Weekend Australian article. It's what I call the miracle happened. You know, for anybody who's sort of trying to identify something, you know, if the other bird that it looks like goes and stands next to it, then that goes a long way to actually figuring out what it is. And yeah, so a common greenshank. Which I hadn't noticed at all because I was just so focused on this bird, basically went and just stood right next to it, actually in the same profile pose. And I looked at the common greenshank, and I looked at this other guy, this mystery bird, and I was going, hang on a sec, this has got the same sort of bill. Actually, the bill is slightly upturned. That's when I noticed it. I thought it's just slightly upturned, it's mildly upturned. It's a similar length. The bird's body is a similar size, but it looks stockier you know, that's the other thing you notice when you look at that that classic comparison photograph took, is it looks stockier. And the reason it looks stockier is simply because it's shorter. You know, it's got a shorter tibia, so it looks like a shorter bird. And then I started noticing other things. So I was like, hang on, the white eye ring is not half as pronounced. Yeah, it does have a white eye ring, but it doesn't look as pronounced as the common green shank. The common green shank's got very noticeable streaking on the top of its head. So this bird didn't really have that, you know. And just in the light I was looking at, I also noticed the... you know, the upper parts, the feathers, you know, common green shank's got those, you know, the black dots around the edges of the feathers. So this guy didn't have that either. So then the word green shank popped into my head. And I was thinking, that was the lucky point where you sort of go, well, what's this look like? Well, it looks like this common green shank. So it's green shanky. That's the adjective that just popped into my head. So this is about, you know, this is less than 10 minutes into the whole sighting. And then once green shank popped into my head, then obviously you're going through, you know, all the green shanks. How many green shanks are there? You know, I could only think of one other green shank, and that was the Nordman. So the name Nordman's just popped into my head, and then I realised I actually did not know I couldn't remember what the Nordmans actually looked like. So I'm on my phone, man. I've got my phone out, and I'm desperately searching on Safari for photographs of the non-breeding Nordmans. So, and I find this picture, and I've still got the bird in my viewfinder, and I'm looking at this picture on my phone, and I'm like, no, this can't, surely not. Wow. Or I was more excited than anything at that point. I've gone, wow. Yeah, you know, in my complete ignorance of actually not knowing how ridiculously rare this bird was, because maybe if I did, I would have dropped that thought. But once I'd seen the photographs on my phone and I was looking at the actual bird itself in real time, I was like, this is identical. You know, this basically looks like this bird. But, and then you start doubting yourself. And I thought the best thing I can do is I'll just keep taking photos and video. And that's exactly what I did. And then I had just a stroke of luck, because I've been watching this bird for a couple of months now. And it called four times separately, different to a common green shank. So that's the other thing I noticed. Thought, hang on, this does not call me like a common green shank either. So I got that on video. I got it caught in that first recording. I got it calling four times. What a miracle. And then it lifted its wings up as well when it was preening, spread its wings out. So I got the underwing pattern as well. I'm like, and that matched as well. And I'm like, this can't be anything else. I hadn't dug into the information too much at that stage because I was still concerned about recording as much as I possibly can, as much as I possibly could, sorry. And then I think it was 7:30 when it flew off because the tide came in. Was about 1.7 metres, 1.8, and it flew off with the common, I think, at that stage. So I can't remember whether I actually raced home at that stage or whether I actually went to the north end of the Esplanade and did a bit more birding. But I did go home and I downloaded my photos pretty immediately. And then when I was really looking at them and really doing a bit more research is when I was pretty convinced, you know. But if you've birded for a while, you're always full of doubts. You're always full of doubts, aren't you, about what you've actually seen? So then I emailed the facilitator of our local birding group that we've got here in Cairns. It's various ferrets. I think it's got about 80 members on it, people who are birders and that. And they do a lot of trips around Cairns and stuff. So I emailed him and said, look, you know, I think I've got a Norman's green shank. I think everybody better get down the Esplanade this afternoon. And then I was a bit impatient. I was like, I hadn't heard back from Andy, so, and you know, the clock was ticking, and I'm like, I've got to get this out there, and I don't think I'd used the Australian Bird ID Facebook page, and I wasn't even a member of the Twitchers ID Facebook page either. You know, it was pretty sort of unconnected, really, you know, because it's really been sort of a solo sort of hobby for me in many ways, this, even though I've been doing it for years. So I put my best photos up, you know, the underwing, you know, when Seba got the call and all that sort of stuff, and put about 5 photos up there, I think. And, you know, posted it. And then you sort of, all the blood drains from you, you know, because you got, you're thinking, oh, it's, someone's going to come back and say, you idiot. Yeah, no, that's a common green shank, you idiot. You know, even though you're like, it can't be anything else. It really can't. It just, there's nothing else it can be, you know, but you're still doubting yourself. And so I think it took a few minutes before, I think it was Adrian Boyle, who you had on the show, and he'd seen them in Western Australia on this really remote beach. And he said, yeah, that's it. That's the Northmans. And then I think I posted OMG or something like that, because, you know, a few exclamation marks. And I tell you what, I was jumping for joy at home, you know, because I was still sitting in front of the computer and I just couldn't believe it. I just, you know, well, you've been burning for that long and, yeah, you see a few rarities here and there, you know, but it's usually when other people have found them. And even though it's really nice, you know, it's still, to not, you're not in the fact that I didn't just find a rarity. I've just found this, like, mega, you know, this ridiculously rare bird, you know. And, you know, had it confirmed by the experts. And it was just such a great feeling. It really was. It's like you say, it's what every birder sort of dreams of, or most of them, let's say. You know, it's certainly something I've been dreaming about, you know, since I was a kid. So, yeah, so that's really the story, really. And then that afternoon we had about, I did this panoramic photograph for everybody who was on the Esplanade, and I counted 40 in a panoramic photograph, but there were a few more that hadn't come down onto the mud. So yeah, there was something like probably 50, maybe 60 people who showed up, because for, you know, because everybody understood, you know, locally how ridiculously rare this bird was. So it just, everybody was there. You know, people just came down from the tablelands. I'm not too sure whether that afternoon anybody drove up from Townsville. I haven't found that out, but I wouldn't have been surprised. And the next day, yeah, people started flying in. And people are still flying in. And I get, people are telling me this all the time. One of the reasons people are still coming is because of the constant updates, not just from me, but, you know, because it's giving people confidence, you know, because if you're in Sydney, for example, or Melbourne, you don't want to pay for an expensive holiday to Cairns, you know, if this bird's not going to be there. So it's the fact that it's still here, and the fact that everybody's seeing it every day, it gives people confidence to come up and fly up and tick it off the list, because, hey, why the heck wouldn't you? You know, it's just maybe a once-in-a-lifetime sort of thing. Because even though you could probably go to, you know, 80 Mile Beach and maybe possibly see one, you might not, and, you know, that's a long way to go to not see a bird and to spend a day trying to look for one, you know, amongst thousands of other waders. Whereas you can literally rock up to the Cairns Esplanade, you can step off the plane, you can get a 5-minute Uber ride to the Esplanade, you can rock up in front of Muddy's, you can give me a call the other weekend. I'll say, yeah, it's here, you know, I've just seen it. And, you know, you can literally be, you know, within a few metres of it, you know, if it runs up to the edge of the sand. Oh, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I won't lie. I was actually looking at flights yesterday. I was like, oh, I reckon I could get one day off if I could. I reckon my wife would give me one day. Hop on a plane in the morning, fly over there, and come back. And if flights weren't about $450, I would probably have. We wouldn't be having this conversation over the phone.
No, that's right.
This would be face to face.
Well, you're in the same boat as a lot of birders. You know, they've just been asking that whole question about, you know, about whether they come or not.
Yeah. So we have done something wrong here, and I'm going to cut this out. We've got 3 things connected. So Zoom is just about to cut us off. Because you only have a 40-minute limit.
Do you want me to hang the pot on from the phone?
No, it won't make any difference. So I will send you another link in a second and we'll continue the conversation.
No worries.
As I mentioned, that was it. That was, we cut off there. we came back in and we continued on that path that we were on, and then we talked about Adrian's life and birding the Esplanade and birding in the Cairns wider region and all of that. So if you come back in a fortnight, we will have the second half of this chat. So I look forward to having you listen in then. Until then, happy birding.